ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 28, Kapila's Instructions on Devotional Service, Text 28. Komara Kim Bhagavato Daitam Smarita. Digdhamarati Patasho Nittakaramena. Mala madhu vrata varuta giro pagustam. Chetyasya taptam amalam manamasya kante. Kaumara king bhagavato daitam smarita. Digdhamarati patasho nittakaramena. Mala madhu vrata varuta giro pagustam. Chetyasya taktam amalam manamasya kante. Kaumara kim bhagavato daitam smarita. Digdhamarati bhattasho nittakardamena. Mala madhu vrata varuta giro pagustam. Chetyasya taptam amalam manamasya kante. The yogi should meditate upon his club, which is named Kaumodaki, and is very dear to him. This club smashes the demons, who are always inimical soldiers, and is smeared with their blood. One should also concentrate on the nice garland on the neck of the Lord, which is always surrounded by bumblebees with their nice buzzing sound. And one should meditate upon the pearl necklace on the Lord's neck, which is considered to represent the pure living entities who are always engaged in his service. Purport. The yogi must contemplate the different parts of the transcendental body of the Lord. Here it is stated that the constitutional position of the living entities should be understood. There are two kinds of living entities mentioned here. One is called the Arati. They are averse to understanding the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For them, the Lord appears with his hand clutching the terrible mace, which is always smeared with blood stains from killing of demons. Demons are also sons of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, all the different species of living entities are sons of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are, however, two classes of living entities who act in different ways. The Supreme Lord keeps on his neck those living entities who are pure, as one protects the jewels and pearls on the bosom and neck of one's body. Those living entities in pure Krishna consciousness are symbolized by the pearls on his neck. Those who are demons and are inimical towards the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are punished by his mace, which is always smeared with the blood of such fallen living entities. The club of the Lord is very dear to him, because he uses this instrument to smash the bodies of the demons and mix their blood. As mud is kneaded with water and earth, so the earthly bodies of the enemies of the Lord, or the atheists, are smashed by the club of the Lord, which becomes muddied with the blood of such demons. Om Agana Timidandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasavi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. This chapter is describing the Ashtanga Yoga system. The goal of that system is meditating on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In that way, we should always know that Bhakti Yoga is giving you immediately a chance to be absorbed in thinking of Krishna. The goal of the Ashtanga Yoga system, the yoga of eight limbs, is samadhi. Samadhi does not mean some kind of physiological state in which all your physical and mental functions become still. No, that is a material understanding of samadhi. The full conception of samadhi means that all your senses are focused upon Krishna in fullness. Now, as everyone knows, the Ashtanga Yoga system is practically impossible in this age. Nevertheless, Krishna can be yours fully from the very beginning if one takes to Bhakti Yoga seriously. This process of Bhakti Yoga is the gift of Lord Chaitanya. In other words, you don't have to go through so many preliminary processes just to steady your mind with the hope of one day being able to think of Krishna. Now, in Bhakti Yoga, immediately you are presented with Krishna. Here is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now think of Him. Think of His service. Look at Him. Taste His food. Hear the sound vibration glorifying Him. Chant His name. Immediately you get all that. So there are two things going on at the same time in Bhakti Yoga. You're becoming free of material contamination, and you are focusing directly on the Supreme Lord. This happens from the very beginning. As soon as you take up the sadhana practices of bhakti, you have both the negative and the positive going on simultaneously. The negative must be done. We must negate our material desires and material attachments. In the Ashtanga Yoga process, the hope is that by training the breath, by manipulating the breath, you'll be able to control the mind, and in this way, control material desires. Bhakti Yoga does that directly by engaging us in Krishna's service. Once Srila Prabhupada was explaining how everyone is looking for peace. The sense enjoyers want peace through sense gratification. That is basically the motto these days of the world. Let us have global peace through sense gratification. Let us admit the unifying factor. Let us recognize this principle. No matter what country we come from, no matter what religion we claim to belong to, it doesn't matter. You can believe any way you like. Be from any country you like. But let us unite on the platform of world sense gratification. That's what's being offered today. Why should you be in the primitive bodily conception of life, identifying with a particular tribe, ethnic group? Just like if in Afghanistan, you know, there are 150 different tribes. So that's looked down upon now by civilized people as being very primitive. This ethnic, religious identification, all these different splinter ethnic groups. What is the liberated platform? You are a citizen of the whole world. You're beyond national boundaries. You're beyond ethnic boundaries. You are a resident of planet Earth. This is supposed to be the enlightened, liberated stage. When actually, it is simply another version of the same old bodily conception of life. The Krishna conscious person has nothing to do with any kind of material conception. The Krishna conscious devotee does not identify as this ethnic group or that ethnic group, nor do we identify as residents of planet Earth. Although it sounds so superlative to people these days to be a consumer in the global market, to participate in the global communication system. People are really, dizzy about these things. It's the same old bodily conception. Whether you say you're from a little village in Afghanistan, which is a particular tribe, or you say you're a citizen of the world, it's the same Maya. Whether your world is seen as the whole globe, or your world is seen as a little village, still the problem is we think we are the enjoyers. Just a question of how big our world is. We are the world. That used to be a popular song, I think, some years ago. Everyone would get very exhilarated. And we are the world. What does that mean? We are its enjoyers. People get sentimental in that way. They get that feeling. We are the world. This is the way to go. We represent the future of the world. It's too bad. As long as you think you are the enjoyer of this world, there'll be nothing but problems. There'll never be any world peace. But that is the best that intelligent people can offer you these days, so-called intelligent people. World peace through sense gratification, the unifying factor. So, we all know, what is the result of sense gratification, whether it's individual, collective, global, whatever? There is simply frustration and distress. And then there must be fighting because no one is ever satisfied with sense gratification. Whether you're just a couple, a man and woman, whether you're a village, whether you're a city, a nation, or the whole world. When there is sense gratification, you'll become frustrated. And then you'll fight. That's the way it is. This is the law of nature. No matter what scale your sense gratification activities are on, between two persons, in a village, in a country, in the whole world, doesn't matter. There must be frustration, there must be disappointment, there'll be anger, and then there'll be fighting. So no question of peace. Then some persons, they realize, what's the use of identifying with this temporary body? We're all spirit soul. Let's give up all the temporary activities of sense enjoyment and realize that we are the spiritual everything. We are the supreme. There's no peace for them either. Even though they understand they're not the body. Impersonalists, jnanis, understand their spirit soul, but they do not distinguish the difference between the ordinary spirit soul and the supreme spirit soul. Therefore, again, no peace. Then the yogis, mystic yogis, want mystic powers in order to control and enjoy. Still, you see the same problem. Either you want to control and enjoy as a karmic worker, or you want to do it as an impersonalist. We are all God. We'll enjoy in that way. Or you want to do it as a mystic yogi, I'll develop psychic powers. That'll make my life much, much easier. In all these cases, no peace. That's what Lord Chaitanya meant. He said, Krishna bhakta nishkam atayava shanta. Bhukti mukti siddhi kami sakali ashanta. No peace for any classification of living entity except for the Krishna bhakta. So Srila Prabhupada explained, my devotees are always peaceful when they're always thinking how to spread Krishna consciousness. That is samadhi. That is the goal of the Ashtanga Yoga system, to always think how to serve Krishna's senses. Now, in Bhakti Yoga, you get that goal right from the beginning. Now, because we get it right from the beginning, we can take it very cheaply. We've seen this happen over the years, that devotees who have been around for some time, they think, well, this hearing and chanting I did as a new bhakta, this going to the temple to worship the deity, attending a temple program, I did years ago. What comes next? What comes next? Nothing. Nothing. Now you are with Krishna. And hopefully, 10, 20, 30 years from now, for the rest of your life, you'll be with Krishna. Now you are seeing Krishna. You are associating with Krishna. There's nothing more. You might as well get used to it. There's going to be nothing else. Understand that and be peaceful. I've heard, I don't have experience, but I've heard that, you know, the good householders, they say, you just make up your mind, this is it. This is the person I'm married to, that's the way it's going to be, and be peaceful about it. So, similarly, you're here with Krishna, this is the way it's going to be, nothing else, that's it. Of course, what goes on in this relationship with Krishna? It gets deeper and deeper. Still, the fact is, from the very beginning, you are seeing Krishna. There are just different levels of intensity in seeing Krishna. But the fact is, even the neophyte devotee is seeing Krishna. If you just drink some water and realize Krishna is the taste, you're seeing Krishna. Now, obviously you don't have the same intense love and devotion as a very advanced devotee, but still you are seeing Krishna. When you stand before the deities, you're looking at Krishna. As your love increases, your vision will become more and more saturated with devotion, and you'll see more. Just like in an ordinary relationship. In the ideal sense, the more you get to know the person, the more you become enthralled. So similarly, in the true sense, the more you get to know Krishna, the more you'll be absorbed in thinking of Krishna. Nevertheless, from the very beginning, you are with Krishna. You're seeing Krishna. You are participating in the perfect activities of the spiritual world immediately. Well, sometimes we take it cheaply because there doesn't seem to be any next step beyond just hearing and chanting about Krishna, thinking about how to serve Krishna. But there's such depth in the experience available. A new devotee and an older devotee who's been properly following, they can stand together in front of the deities, but there'll be a completely different depth of experience. Still, the basic activity is the same, but the internal absorption is different. So therefore, we should become peaceful, realizing there's nothing more than these processes of devotional service. Even in your Raganuga stage, which Prabhupada said will come if you follow his process. You go on serving Krishna, but with inside you're cultivating. You go on serving Krishna as everyone is doing in terms of the processes of devotion. But internally you're cultivating your particular attraction for Krishna. In other words, it's not that you say, oh, I think I'm getting a bit of raga, some attraction for Krishna now. Okay, that's it for the program for me. I'll just stay somewhere by myself and focus on my raga. No, you also go to the program, you participate in all the preaching activities of Prabhupada's movement, but within yourself, you cultivate a particular attraction for one of Krishna's devotees. That's all. So whether you're beginning or whether you're finishing, still, these activities that we're doing, this is the reality. Hearing and chanting about Krishna, worshiping Krishna, dancing before the deities, taking prasad. This is it. These are the activities of the spiritual world. So once we accept that, once we accept this yoga, then we'll be peaceful. And furthermore, if we're always thinking how to spread Krishna consciousness, we'll get the peace that the greatest yogis cannot get. Always thinking how to give Krishna to others. There's always a choice. We heard in the selection from Chaitanya Charitamrita this morning that you have a choice and you have the power. The material energy obscures this fact that you can choose whether you want to be under the influence of the spiritual energy or the material energy. You have that ability. Many times we forget this because Maya is a confusing influence upon you. You feel like, oh, so many things are happening to me. I have no choice. I don't know what to do. Everything looks very cloudy. Everything looks bewildering, complex. And you cannot see the basic facts of life that you can choose because you're the marginal potency, tatastha shakti. You can choose to go to the spiritual side or the material side. At every moment, you have that choice. What else? You also have the power to fulfill your choice. In other words, you have enough energy you have enough ability to carry out your spiritual choice or your material choice. Krishna has arranged that. You can choose and you have the power. You have the ability to act either in the spiritual way or the material way. It doesn't look like that, though, in the fog of Maya. In the fog of Maya, everything looks so intricate. There's so many contingencies, relativities, and excuses and rationalizations. If only this, then. Oh, but I can't, even though I want to. But because on and on and on it goes. That's how things look through the fog of Maya. We don't see clearly. I have the power to choose. It's been given to me because I'm tatastha shakti and the marginal potency of the Lord. In this way, it's so refreshing to hear Prabhupada's purports making everything so clear for us. We don't like clarity when we want to be in Maya. it's just too much for us. This is just too straightforward. It's just stated too clearly. But that's what we need to hear. Srila Prabhupada's books teach you how to think by stressing what is important for you to consider every day so that you can go back to Godhead. The more you absorb your consciousness in these books, the more you'll understand what is the best thing to think about, how to look at the world. It's very important. Because if you don't look at the world through these Bhaktivedanta purports, you'll come up with your own way. You have to look at the world. Now, how are you going to do that? Everybody is always looking at something according to their particular relationship with Krishna. There are unfavorable and there are favorable ways of relating to Krishna. That's how great Krishna is. This verse talks about the demons. Their blood stains the club of the Lord. The verse also talks about the devotees, the pure living entities who are always engaged in Krishna's service. The white pearl necklace on the Lord's neck represents the pure living entities. And then on his neck is a garland, always surrounded by bumblebees with nice buzzing sounds. So there's both things happening at the same time. The wrong choice and the right choice. Krishna deals with them all in a relationship. those who are related to the club with their blood. That is connection to Krishna. Any way you come in contact with Krishna, even through his club, you benefit. You're related to Krishna. Unfortunately, you have an averse attitude towards Krishna's pastimes. Now, why would someone have that, have an attitude problem about Krishna Leela? You don't want to hear it. You don't want to contemplate it because you'd rather think of your own so-called pastimes. This is the envy problem at the root of our entanglement in material nature. Sometimes the question is asked, if we were with Krishna, we would be perfectly satisfied. So, how is it that we could become averse to Krishna when being with Krishna means perfect satisfaction? How could we reject Krishna? Devotees would always ask Prabhupada that. And once in France, Prabhupada answered that it's not that you lose your taste for Krishna in the beginning. It's not like that. What happens is you think, along with Krishna, maybe I'll try something else too. He said, just like you get dal rice and chapatis every day, it's not that you don't like dal rice and chapatis, but one day you decide, I like some halva. So, you're with Krishna. It's not that you're dissatisfied with Krishna, but you just think, I wonder what it'd be like to do what Krishna does. I wonder what it'd be like to be a Krishna. And then you have to be in the material world for that. Still, you have your relationship with Krishna. We're never separated from Krishna, although the material world manages an illusion. It conjures up an illusion that you're not related to Krishna. But everyone is seeing Krishna according to their way, either favorably or unfavorably. You can see that when Krishna was entering the wrestling arena of King Kamsa. Krishna had just killed Kubalayapi, the elephant. You know how he did that. He grabbed Kubalayapi by the trunk and threw him on the ground. And then Krishna ripped out a tusk from this huge elephant, climbed on the elephant's back, and beat the elephant keeper and Kubalayapi to death. This is God. You just see that. Ripping out. Kubalayapi had the strength of 10,000 elephants. Yeah, that's how strong Kubalayapi was. Krishna just ripped out his huge tusk, climbed on his back, and beat him to death. And then Balaram came and ripped out the other tusk. And together, he and Krishna paraded into the arena. How was the Lord looking? Very blissfully decorated with drops of elephant blood and elephant perspiration. Just contributing to his beauty, the decoration of the champion. And then his own perspiration was also there. So he and Balaram marched into the wrestling arena, each with a tusk on their shoulder, followed by the cowherd boys. Kamsa was stricken with fear at this point. Anxiety. How to kill Krishna who can't be killed? This was Kamsa's neurotic problem. How can I kill this person who I know can't be killed, but he's got to be killed because he's going to kill me, so I got to kill him, but he can't be killed. He was always thinking of Krishna that way, although unfavorably. Very intense meditation, Kamsa had. So Krishna and Balaram enter into the arena, and they're shining with an effulgence. And all the different people there are looking at Krishna in different ways. They're all seeing Krishna, but according to where they're at, according to their consciousness, they see something different. Actually, there were 10 types of ways of seeing Krishna at the same time. What did the wrestlers, Chanura, Mushtika, what did they see? They saw thunderbolts. And they were very angry. They were feeling unfavorable secondary rasa of fury, anger. What did the men of Mathura see? They saw Nanavar, the best of the males. They agree. Krishna is the best of us. Yes, he's the best man. What did the ladies of Mathura see? Cupid personified. And they felt conjugal attraction. Then there were impious kings there who were subordinate to Kamsa. They saw, oh, this is the chastiser. They recognized Krishna in that way. Kamsa himself saw death personified. Then the Brijvasis who were visiting Mathura, the older cowherd men, they saw Swajana. He's our own village boy, Krishna. So they were laughing. The Vrishni dynasty, they saw their Padadevata, their worshipable deities. They felt love and devotion. There were some yogis there. They saw the super soul in neutrality. Some people saw the universal form, the Bharat Roop. All this is going on at the same time. So don't think that everyone is seeing exactly the same way. No, it's according to the particular flavor that they have in their relationship with Krishna. Rasovai sa, Krishna is the taste in all the relationships. It's always a good point to remember. People are so concerned about relationships these days. They can't have a basic relationship without getting at least 10 books about how to have a relationship. There is such anxiety. Are my relationships, you know, proper? Am I getting all that I should be from my relationships? Should I end this relationship? You have to get a book. When to say no. When to end your relationship. And you go buy another book. When to start a relationship. How not to be too codependent in a relationship. How to be assertive in a relationship. On and on and on it goes. It's such anxiety how to have a relationship. Simplest things these days they can't do without such complicated endeavors. Krishna is the taste of the relationship. You remember that point, and your life becomes so simple and peaceful. This pleasure, this feeling that I want from the relationship, that is Krishna. Even if it's unfavorable, still, it's all coming from Krishna. This is a point made by Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta Sarasvati Thakura. So everyone's looking at Krishna in different ways. Then the music for the wrestling match starts to enliven the wrestlers. People start talking. Look at these boys. They're everything we heard about. Krishna and Balaram. We've heard about their pastimes. Now they're here. Everything that we've heard is true. Just look at them. And the whole arena starts buzzing with glorification of Krishna. Chanur and Mushtika, they can't handle this. Too much glorification of Krishna. So Chanura stands up and makes this challenge. Okay. Nandasuno. Hey, Nandasuno. Hey, Rama. Krishna and Balaram. We've heard that you two enjoy wrestling in the forest in Vrindavan, and you're always blissful. Demons don't like the fact that devotees are happy. So Chanura pointed that out. He pointed out, we've heard you're always blissful in the forest wrestling. Now, let me tell you one thing. We all know if you do what the king wants, your life becomes sublime. And if you don't do what the king wants, you suffer. I advise you, therefore, to engage in this wrestling match as the king has ordered. So, Krishna welcomed the challenge. Krishna's always ready to have fun. He's supreme fun personified. He wants to wrestle. That's nice. At the same time, Krishna's mindful of Dharma. After all, we're just young boys. These are professional wrestlers like huge mountains. So although Krishna was not afraid in the least, and he was ready for action, still he had to speak religious principles. While he's enjoying, he's doing his duty as a Supreme Personality of God is speaking Dharma. He said, yes, it's true we are subjects of the king, but let me point out, this fight is unequal. You are older, we are younger, you're huge, we're small. That's actually not very religious. But Chanura, he didn't want to hear this. Look, we know who you are. We've just seen what you've done. You've killed Kublai Apeed, who had the strength of 10,000 elephants. In other words, enough of this talk. Let's get it on. We know who you and Balaram are. So then they began fighting, wrestling. And there were different reactions in the arena according to who you were. The ladies get a prominent role. Shukadeva Goswami goes through quite a few verses describing the ladies' view of a wrestling match. This is Bhagavatam, it's very unique. How many times do you, I'm sure you don't read the sports section of the newspaper, but do you see articles on the ladies' view of the Lakers playing in the championship series? It was there in the Bhagavatam. How dare anyone think the Bhagavatam is a macho book? You have a wrestling match, the essence of male combat activity, and you've got about five verses describing the ladies' view of the wrestling match. This is Bhagavatam. You didn't know that, did you? The ladies were talking, how can anyone allow this match to go on? This is irreligion. These boys, so tender, so young. And these huge wrestlers. Anyone with decent religious principles will not stay in this arena. If you don't say something, then you'll get sinful activity. How can this go on? Then they began to condemn Mathuradam. This is how powerful their emotions were, that they were going to condemn the holy city of Mathura. How did they do it? By glorifying Vrindavan. How fortunate is Vrindavan, the holy land where Krishna and Balaram always walk through. That's their way of condemning Mathura. In other words, they're saying, in Mathura, the lords are bullied by professional wrestlers, but in Vrindavan, they roam through the forest freely with their cows playing flutes. How wonderful is Vrindavan. And how wonderful are the gopis, who, throughout all their household activities, they're simply thinking of Krishna. Whether they're taking care of their children, whether they're winnowing grain, whether they're gathering cow dung for fuel, whether they're cooking, no matter what they do, their minds are attached to Krishna. And their voices, choked up with tears, are always singing the glories of Krishna. That is the perfection of yoga. That is samadhi. So it's a long story what Krishna did in the wrestling arena after he finished off the wrestlers and then dealt with Kamsa and killed Kamsa and then dealt with the funeral of Kamsa. Offered to Kamsa's now widowed wives, he said, I'll help you do the funeral for your dead husband who I just killed. This is God. He's able to handle all types of relationships, all flavors. And you have the choice how you're going to relate to Krishna. Taking up bhakti yoga means you're exercising your choice properly and you're asking Krishna, bring out the strength that's there in me as your part and parcel, as your eternal servant. You please bring it out of me in service to you. That is the life of a devotee. With Krishna from the beginning, with Krishna at the end, simply activities of rendering devotional service to the Lord. So once you accept that, you'll be peaceful. True peace. The peace of rendering service at Krishna's lotus feet. Any questions? Yes.
Maharaj, we see in this what you mentioned, how a neophyte and an advanced devotee, they both see Krishna, but the internal dialogue is so totally different. There's the level of intensities is different. How do we develop that intensity in our Krishna consciousness?
Take some service and put your life and soul into it. That was Prabhupada's yoga method. Take up some service to Prabhupada's mission and put everything you have into it, and Krishna will arrange for your advancement. That's why Prabhupada said the Krishna consciousness movement should always be a challenge. You should always have some service to do in which you're thinking, unless I become pure, I'll never be able to do this service properly. That gets the inner dynamics going inside you. It gets the cleansing action going. So unless devotees are feeling the urgency, the need to play a meaningful role in Prabhupada's mission, they don't get that same yogic effect going on inside their heart. So it's not about getting Prabhus to do this or that. Why devotees think like that sometimes? Oh, they're just trying to get me to do something. They're just ordering me around. You can look at it in that way, but you could also look at it that this is a chance for me to engage in the topmost yoga, cleansing my heart, sacrificing, and in this way, my intensity of devotional service will increase because I'm dedicating myself to achieving goals for Srila Prabhupada's movement. Those who've been around a long time, they know. It's such a rare opportunity to get to sacrifice yourself for Krishna's service. We take for granted these exalted things we've been given us, and that leads to problems. Anything else? Dravida Prabhu.
So this is one of many passages in the Bhagavatam, which you gave us one, in which there seems to be a great sense of joy and ecstasy, not only in Krishna's smashing the demons and smearing them with blood on them and grinding them into the dirt and getting, the kardama means mud actually. I'm thinking of Jarasan, he got killed, rivers of blood and body parts. But then we have the more modern phenomenon of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, in which we're not meant to think like that really about the demons, that we're trying to kill the demonic mentality within them. So how can we reconcile? I mean, it's ecstatic if they read about the club and all these and Kuvayapatita, Kalvi Kuvayapatita and Chanura. But then our mood is meant to be different. How do we go from this mood to the mood of mercy, even for those who are demonic?
A devotee is advised to be angry at seeing demoniac activities. When you hear about how people are ruining their lives through such degradation that is commonly available today, a devotee gets angry. But that anger is transformed into distribution. In other words, it's not like ordinary anger. Material anger means you just get angry and you smash a wall or you scream at somebody. But spiritual anger, true spiritual anger, results in wanting to do something constructive about the situation. So therefore, the result of the devotee's anger at seeing the vices of Kali Yuga is that he reaches out to help. So that is the way a follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu resolves that. Yes, Narottam Das Thakur says all our emotions should be used for Krishna's pleasure, even anger, even lust. You lust to use everything in Krishna's service. You're angry at how people abuse themselves and destroy their chances for Krishna consciousness. But it all ends up with Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtana. One way or another, push on the glories of the Lord. All the emotions fused into that end goal. That's how Prabhupada managed ISKCON. Everything wound up in being fused into this singular goal, this singular samadhi of distributing Lord Chaitanya's mercy to everyone. You know, sometimes Prabhupada, he would get angry. He would said some very strong things about material society. But the result was always the same thing. Out you go, preach the movement of Lord Chaitanya. Thank you very much, Glory Shilbrahma. Yeah. Adi Baba.